Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh. Oh. It's that time. It's Empowerment 365. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Thank you for joining Empowerment Saturday. We got a wonderful show for you today. Come on, Luther. Sit back, buckle up. Let's get this show started. All right. Come on. There is no better love. Hear me, people. There is no better love than love for self and kind. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday, another edition of the Empowerment Saturday show. Is 365 days of African-American empowerment where we're working on ourselves. We're improving politically, economically, athletically. That's health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. Yes, that's right. It's the peace concept. It's all about peace in our community. How do we confirm our peace? How do we manage ourselves to get us from out of this ditch and out of these mental and emotional traps that we're placed in by a society that continues to do the work of declining us mentally, physically, and emotionally? We have to do the work of overcoming that. So today, if you look at the NAAEA schedule of activities, it is our summit on African-American education. We're going to talk about the education piece and the pillars of empowerment. Why is education important to our African-American families and our children? How will we move forward in terms of educating our children? And also, education starts at home. So I want to start with this proposition, is that when we talk in terms of education starts in the home and in the family, we have to understand, we were talking the other day about the most important piece to develop in our kids is home training. You got to find that thing at home. And if our homes are dysfunctional, how do we supplement that so that we can get all of us taken care of together? It's a togetherness. It's a peace that we must find. There's a place in our hearts that we must find for loving ourselves and developing ourselves each day and every day, and just one day at a time. And so today I'm going to bring in a good friend to our show and to the community. And he has been working very hard and diligently in his area to make sure that our community is doing what it's supposed to do to improve itself. And so I'll bring in a good friend of mine, is Dr. Michael Macklin. Dr. Macklin, are you there?
I am here. I am here, sir.
Hey,
I am here.
How you doing, brother? So I welcome you to the summit today, right? And we're going to talk about education. I don't really want to go deep into your background, but I kind of want you to introduce yourself, tell our audience what it is that you do, and what it is that you think are the critical areas that we need to improve on as we continue to develop educational institutions that define our own reality.
Great. Well, first of all, let me say thank you for, it's great to be here. I really appreciate the invite and the opportunity. Anytime that I can come on or anytime that I can speak about the educational journey or the inequities that our students of color face in the education arena today, I'm delighted to do that. And so I'm not going to bore you with my background. I will say that I am Dr. Michael Macklin. I have traveled across the country and just developing and really equity work, equity framework, also really a passion as relates to minority children and just educating and helping school districts be able to understand that piece. And so I will leave my contact information at the end, but I have over 20 years in educational experiences, really in a number of different roles and being able to do that, sir, from there. Currently, okay. I'm in St. Louis and reside here as a director of equity for a very large school district.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to bring in my co-host, and I'm sure you know who this is. So I'll bring in my co-host now. Stan Macklin, are you available?
I'm here, my brother, and it is such a wonderful joy to be able to listen and to know that my nephew Amen, is on the program today to share about his educational achievements and enhancement to further take our program to a next level. So we're glad to have you on the show today, Brother Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Uncle. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's get started. Let's talk about educational equity. And I introduced that African-American education starts at home. Right. So what are the things that you're seeing where you are and in your experience? And let's talk about how that's impacting our children and our families, and then some solution or some calls to action.
First piece, you are exactly right. But before we focus on what the schools are doing or not doing, we first must talk about what's going on in the home and not going on in the home. Most children of color originated from homes with structure, right? If you, if you look at history, most children of color originated from homes of structure. That means there was structure in the home. Even if it was a single-parent home, there was structure in the home. When that structure left the home, now you see children of color who have went into the mainstream arena and have just, because that structure was not there in the home, has exhibited those cultural incompetencies. And so now you see it more and more on a daily basis, and teachers aren't able to handle that. So someone would say, well, what do you mean by that? Even if there was a single mother who was raising eight boys, when that mother asked those boys to be quiet, they knew to stop talking. And so that mother may have had ways of ensuring that those boys have stopped talking. That is what we don't see anymore in the home, right? Marvin and Uncle Stan, that's what we don't see anymore in the home, which then translates to school, right?
That's right.
Translates to school. Now, as it relates to the school piece, and I really want callers and I want you guys to understand when I say this. The number one, the reason why African-American students struggle in school, the reason why African-American students or students of color struggle in school is because of inequities. I need you guys to grasp this, because we often talk about there is a difference between equity and equality. See, equality is equal. So if you have a pizza, equality is ensuring that everybody gets a slice of pizza. But if we have equity is ensuring that the kid who didn't eat last night gets two slices of pizza. Getting what that student needs, whether it may be access or resources, to be beneficial in school. That's where school districts fail. The mandate really of Brown versus Board of Education has yet to be fulfilled. And research shows that for African-American children and Latino children especially, access to high-quality public education remains a challenge. And so even though you may think that we have segregation, our schools still highly remain segregated. Let me give an example. I was working with the school here in St. Louis who asked me to come work with them. This school is 96% African American. 96% African American. And I want your callers to understand this. A 96% African American. It's been around since 1959. In 40, 50, 60 years, they have not had one black valedictorian or salutatorian. Now, the school is 96% African-American. So you're telling me in 60 years you couldn't have one student, African-American student, who was a valedictorian, salutatorian for 60 years, that 4% of whites have been valedictorian, salutatorian every single year? So what we found out was that when we start delving into just the systemic practices, is that students of color were left out
of AP and honors classes and didn't have the chance to ever gain those accolades because they never had the access to those classes.
Come on, brother.
Wow. And so even though it seems that Brown versus Board of Education was about segregation, we are still segregated in our schools today. Most African-American students attend schools with less qualified teachers who are underpaid. Additionally, these schools serve the most vulnerable populations. And the biggest piece when it comes down to it is they lack funding. They lack funding. And so most of the work that I do focuses on, I don't want to call it, it's not the icing on the cake, but it's systemic issues in school districts that keep students of color from not excelling. Systemic issues, right, that keep students from not excelling. We today's in schools, and this is really across the country, a lot of our mandates focus on output. So graduation rates, test scores, those kind of things is what commissioners and legislators focus on. But I challenge those same individuals to focus on the input. If the input is there, that means if you have adequate funding, if you have highly qualified teachers, if you have small classes, if you have teachers who care in every single room, the input means more than the output. For so long, we focus on the output and leave the input to the schools, and we fail. And so that equity term refers to the principle of fairness and being able to ensure that there are educational models and programs and strategies for all, for each and all.
I like that. Thank you for the introduction. Stan, what do you have?
Well, I'm looking at it from a couple of things. Definitely, the home is the first base. That's where instruction starts. When a atmosphere is developed where it is compatible to the learning capacity of the children, then that grows throughout their childhood development into other aspects of youth development and social interaction. However, I have problems with the current educational system. I think it's Dr. Kung Fu. What is it? The one who the
Your
author
brother,
of the book.
The Jufu?
Yes. The conspiracy. Yeah. The system is designed from a Eurocentric perspective.
That's true.
That enhances, and it perpetuates their existence and being maintenance and leaders in that system.
Mm-hmm.
It just is not for us. We can get token leaderships in the hierarchy, but that just makes us like, you know, back in, under the as a house executive or house Negro.
Uh-oh.
Watch
it now.
Who operates in that establishment. And so I'm a firm believer of the goals of NAAEA, the National African American Empowerment Association, where we have to establish our own curriculum and modes and methods of equity, so that we're partners and stakeholders at the beginning.
That's
we're
right.
not trying to catch up. We're trying to fit in or get in. We got to get past that. And I'm done with all that. I'm done with that. I'm going back to the original Timbuktu doctrine.
That was
formational and foundational to the extent that ethnicities from all around the world was coming to get one of those disciplines. There was over 100 different kinds of disciplines flowing out of Timbuktu.
So true.
And so that's where I'm coming from. I'm done with trying to get in to fit in, and that's all across the board. Now, that's revolutionary, that's aggressive, but I say that based on my 40 years or more of being a professional in terms of reality perspectives that confront us as a people. And I just think that we got to stop that. Now, there were some profound things that were said, which is true. If we're going to work to make it within that structure, then right, he hit it right on the head. It's equity. It's not equality. We got to have it across the board. But that's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen, and we got to sooner or later face up to that. And that's where I'm at.
All right, Dr. Macklin, hold on a second, Stan. Give me a moment. We're going to go to our Willie Lynch moment with Brother George, and then we're going to go to the callers. And I'm going to start with 8128 and go from there. Brother George, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome to the show.
Can you hear me? Go ahead. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Today on the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to quote again from Changing Images of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. And everything that is about us destroying the Willie Lynch chip is educational. And I'm going to speak today on the effect of the racial religious images on African Americans. Now, this is by Dr. Blyden that did some research, Edward Blyden. And he said that the most obvious problem that comes from the experience of seeing God in an image of somebody other than yourself is that it creates an idea that that image, that person, is superior or you are inferior. Once you have a concept that begins to make you believe that you are not as good as other people based upon the assumptions we have already established, talking about, you know, the images of God being white. Your actions follow your mind. Your actions follow your mind. If you have your mindset in a certain way, then your behavior follows precisely the program of your mind, meaning that whatever your mind is seeing, it interprets it as reality. So the content of this program determines who we are and what we are. So if you have internalized the view of the deity of the Creator as being in flesh, having nationality and physical characteristics different from yourself, then you automatically assume that you are inferior in your own characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
The sense of inferiority is not in the form of the human humility, which we'll discuss. But you begin to believe that you have less human potential than one who looks like that image. And so that is also a part of the educational system with cultural hegemony, where they flood the market and the educational system with white positive images, and our children adversely think, well, we must not have accomplished anything because all of these images are white and hardly any of them are black. And so that's another way, you know, that Willie Lynch is still working with the color consciousness thing, and it's still affecting us within the educational system also.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that so much. And again, it's our Willie Lynch moment. We're always trying to educate our people on how we've been psychologically trained. So I'm going to go back to Dr. Macklin first, excuse me. And what do you think about that? And then we'll go to the callers.
Well, I would say that cultural responsiveness and what our students are learning in the home. If our students are having to learn the first thing about what's right at school, that's the wrong idea. That's the wrong formation. That's the wrong identification. Because at school, the philosophy is going to be white is right, which is not correct.
Right?
And so if we have to teach our sons and daughters that in the home. When you talk about the educational system, and you talk about state standardized scores, a lot of times we are always compared to what are our Caucasian counterparts doing, and they have set the bar for that. The problem is that white is not right, and that's not the bar that needs to be set. But we have to educate ourselves about that at home, so when we go
that's
to school,
right.
we strictly understand that piece.
That's right. Well said.
All right.
Well said.
Are you guys ready to go to the lines?
Ready to go.
I'm excited. It's a great topic. It's NAAEA Community Conversations and Empowerment Summit on Saturday today. We're talking about education. I'm going to 1881.
I'm muted. Do I need to unmute myself? Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
We can hear you.
Okay, good. Good afternoon. My name is Kimberly, and I just wanted to share a few things. You all hit on some really good points. I am calling from the Tidewater area of Virginia.
Okay.
Calling from Virginia. So you all have hit on a lot of different points. My role in the educational system is as a speech-language pathologist, or what some people call a speech therapist, and what the kids call a speech teacher. Because we're very different than the teachers, but we also serve on the committee that determines whether or not students should receive what they call, in some school districts, special education services, and other districts it may be called support services. They're trying to get away from using the term special education, but basically I think we all know what is meant when we say special education. So the concern that I have as a speech language pathologist and things that I have seen within the educational setting is that is an over identification of African American students, particularly boys. What happens is when they come into the school at a very young age, and they sit in the classroom and the teachers present them with materials, it's oftentimes a lack of their exposure or a lack of their opportunities that result in their inability to perform. Or let's say when it comes to vocabulary, if the teacher is reading or saying something or even presenting them with pictures or looking at a film and they're trying to have a discussion, a lot of times our African-American students may not know the words that are being used. They may not know the meaning of those words. And the reason is because of exposure. A lot of times white students are exposed to different things. Let's say they go to mountains that are caked with snow. So if the teacher says the snow, capped mountain, not caked, but capped mountains, you know, certain students may know what that means because they have a visual interpretation of that based on memory or what, in other words, exposure and opportunities. Whereas an African American student may sit in the classroom and have no idea what that even looks like. They can't even visualize possibly even a mountain. because many students have not been out of the community for which they
True.
Live. And if they,
True.
You know, they may not know what a mountain is. If they have not had that exposure and those opportunities. And the things that calls out many of our African-American students to not have that, especially within inner cities, are systemic reasons. You know, we all know, you know, they don't have the opportunity. And then again, we've talked about, someone talked about how there used to be structure in the home, okay? And oftentimes, unfortunately, what we see now is a lack of structure in the home and a lack of parents have an authority in the home. In other words, like someone else mentioned, that child does not listen to the parent. And this is all ages. I worked in an elementary school once, not in this area, but an elementary school where the children, even the kindergarten children, had no fear of the principal. So that means they have no fear of adults, even at a young age. So it's very hard to manage their behaviors that may be that may interrupt with education, that may be aggressive, that may be, you know, just a distraction to learning. It's very hard for the adults in the schools to manage that. And oftentimes within those inner cities, you end up with professionals who should be highly trained and probably are highly trained. But what happens, because there's no parent involvement, the expectations of what the teachers have to do and their minds become a little less because they kind of know that that parent isn't going to be calling me or that parent isn't going to be asking me questions. So imagine having a white parent that, you know, they may be highly involved, which will make that staff more accountable, okay, in their minds because they, do you all understand what I mean?
Because
they know that someone is kind of looking over what they do. So often you have a combination of children who lack control, who are not attending in the classroom. They have shorter attention spans. And then you have teachers who may have the skills and ability, but are not exerting those skills and ability. So you see that. And so then those children, really the opportunities that they didn't have before school, they still don't really have those opportunities at school. I've seen that. And then I've also seen, let's say, in the system that I'm in now, they may have more opportunities. The professionals may be, you know, highly skilled and highly trained because the district is making an effort to hire those types of professionals. But still the educators do not understand how to teach our children. So when they come into the classroom and they lack that vocabulary, the teachers see that as lack of knowledge versus lack of exposure. So they say that, oh, they can't read, you know, and they may not be able to read because, again, lack of exposure. They don't understand what I'm saying in the classroom, so they don't do well in the language part or science or social studies because they don't understand. They may not do well in math because they can't follow directions. So then they refer those students to the special education team. Instead of trying to teach them differently, they send them to special ed. And then what I see is that these students come into the meetings for special ed, they receive testing, everyone determines that they learn different, and because they learn different, they identify them as learning disordered versus changing the way that the teachers teach. So instead of identifying our kids as learning disordered, what we need to do is change the way that we're teaching in the classroom to meet the needs of these students they are not learning disordered. They have possibly deficits because of lack of exposure and lack of experience.
All right.
So I am also concerned about how they're over-identified.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna hold right there, sister, for a minute. Dr. Macklin, what do you find to be the parallels to that?
So let me say this, and I'm glad that she brought that out, but let me say this. So I sit on a nationwide committee at with the Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education, that looks at over identification of black kids. Right.
Mm-hmm.
My role where I am now oversees 25,000-30,000 students as relates to special education. So let me give you guys a stat, because I truly want you to understand this. Black students represent 18% of preschool enrollment in the country. It's only 18% black students represent, but they represent 50% of the students who are in special education, or identified as special education in preschool.
Mm.
Now, let me say this to you. And Marvin, I really want the callers to understand this. When it comes to over-identifying, yes, these teachers need cultural competencies, which means they need to understand how mm-hmm. to teach students of color. But I want mm-hmm. people to understand this. This does not happen by mistake. This is a systemic policy,
mm-hmm.
systemic
right.
procedure that is put in place to hinder African American students. So
right,
no matter how much cultural competency teaching is going on, no
mm-hmm.
matter how much professional development is going on,
mm-hmm.
this is the systemically done, intently done to hinder
yep.
black boys of color.
Mm-hmm.
You have two choices when it comes to this overrepresentation. Either
mm-hmm.
you perpetuate it or you interrupt
yep.
it. You cannot toe the line.
Wow.
Those are your only choices when it comes to over-identification. And so if
yep.
you wait until the assessment piece or until the eligibility meeting, which means the test has already taken place, you have waited too late. As soon as
mm-hmm.
someone brings up the conversation in a joint review about markets being tested and needing services, that's when you stop it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Point
mm-hmm.
period.
Yep.
Because as long as we keep trying to identify and follow by IDEA and all the rules set by the government, we are going to continue to keep playing this game. This conversation has been happening for the last 43 years.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Let's
perspective. You only have two choices.
Brother Macklin said there's two choices.
Yes.
Perpetuate it or interrupt.
Keep it going or shut it down. Hey, I'm going to go back to the lines because the board is packed, so we'll keep it going. I'm going to 4414. 4414, you're live on the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rowe, Stan Macklin, and Dr. Michael Macklin, you're live.
Well, I'd like to thank the brothers for giving me the opportunity to come on. I'm an educator in the Central Virginia area, in the Richmond area. And just briefly, what the previous caller said, what Dr. Macklin said, I'm in agreement with. I understand that, like you said, we can't have any, even if you do the cultural competencies and things of that nature. I would like to say, though, and add to it, that as the way for me, my recommendation for interruption is that we do our own cultural competency or cultural checks, and and those things take place by way of you know, what we do is, what I found is that reading starts in the womb. They children pick up on
mm-hmm.
what they hear, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm not blaming the victim, but I understand I'm a child of the 60s. So I'm just giving you a little.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of aging myself, and so
mm-hmm.
the language and the music that I grew up hearing, and even that I was brought into, did not equal, much less parallel what's going on and what
mm-hmm.
our children are hearing in the womb and when they come out. And so if we, as educators in the African American community, if we already know, like Dr. Macklin is saying, if we already know what the game plan is, then we need to be able to take that game plan and make the adjustment in our culture. And if we know what the testing is going to be, if we know that prior to, you know, X date, that Marcus is going to be targeted so that we have these eligibility meetings, then what we do is, as a community, as a culture, we
mm-hmm.
work to undergird our kids. How do we undergird
right.
our kids? If we already know what the game plan is, then we work to you know, we don't expose them to the level of profanity that they are in their home. We do as parents or as grandparents or aunties or uncles, we work on the basics, and we as educators within any institution within our communities, whether it's churches or community centers or whatever else, we speak and create other and take platforms like this and then go beyond that and say, hey, y'all, this is what we need to do. We need to start reading from minute one, you know, and if you can't, if you're a single mom and you're working so many shifts, then that's when we go the intergenerational route and we go on and we turn that over using the game plan that the educators map out in our community and say, okay, this is what they suggested. This is the material that they said we should read. You know, and then I would say this, we as a people, again, that blaming the victim, just looking at a template that we've already used and for success. I'll use this as an example. In the movie Aquila and a Bee, you know, she was successful because she had a mentor. She identified that she wanted to compete in a spelling bee, and she ultimately went on to succeed. Why can't we take the same energies that we put into AAU and develop another system that parallels this to override what Dr. Macklin is talking about beforehand and create the AAAU, the African American Academic Union?
All right.
We must compete. Mm-hmm. Put the same level of energy and passion and show it for our kids like we're cheering for them on the sideline. Let's do like we have the movie The Great Debaters. Why can't we create community debate teams or community, you know, spoken word teams or things of that nature that shows that there's value in academics and we do that from a cultural perspective and connect the proverbial dots. And then we get ahead of the systemic racism. We already know what the game plan is. Then let's get ahead of it. Let's be proactive. Let's do this.
And
map out this plan.
I want to make sure. I want to make sure that I'm going to leave my number. I want to make sure, brother. What's your name again, sir? I'm sorry, I missed it.
We'll decide to communicate outside of the line in terms of that, but. But, you know, I got the number. We'll collaborate that way.
Great.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Anything you want to respond to before we get to the next caller, Dr. Macklin? And Stan, you could join in as well.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it came out because I was going to come out to, I guess, not really attack, but to expose the Department of Education, that cabinet agency that's there
go ahead.
That perpetuates the whole thing. My nephew said it right. Either we you said annihilate or
perpetuate,
and he's right.
Or
that's
interrupt.
What the Department of Education did. And do you know who the head of that is? Listen, brothers and sisters, we got it. We are original kings and queens on planet Earth. And all we got to do, we had every discipline. We're master of excellence. And we have everything it takes, technology, scientific, educational, cultural. All we got to do is return back to the basics. There's nothing we can't do on this planet Earth because we're under a command to be fruitful, to multiply, to replenish, to subdue, and to have dominion. And we've lost our dominion because we're so confined to fitting in and getting in, we have gotten ourselves into a mess. And it's going to take individuals like that's been speaking today for us to, I like the way you summed it up, annihilate or perpetuate. Time out for that Time out.
All right. Dr. Macklin, what do you have before we get to the next caller? The lines are packed.
I want individuals to know that any issue you see in education, lack of African-American teachers, teacher shortage, funding. If you look at funding as it relates to students of color, if you look at funding just from the dollar amount as it relates to students of color, the stats actually was given that students who go to Caucasian schools are white students receive an average of $23 billion more dollars. So
yep.
I want us to understand none of this yep. is done by purpose. It is all
right.
systemically planned and plotted to keep
Exposed.
Students of color not succeeding.
Yep.
That every single piece is
yep.
systemically planned. These
yes.
are, and when you talk about a school district,
yes.
there are systemic policies written
That's
in
right.
to the Board of Education policies and procedures
mm-hmm.
to keep students of color from succeeding.
All
yep.
right. That's
so
why
true.
We have to have
so
an educational political agenda that speaks to the needs of our children and our communities. I'm going back to the line. Thank you for Dr. Macklin. We're going to 6296. It's the Empowerment Network, Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin and Dr. Macklin. What you got for us?
Hey, what's up, Mr. Rohn? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to add on two things what the two gentlemen said prior to. I like the idea of focusing more attention in our communities on education from the standpoint of like having those debate clubs in the community the same way that you have AAU football, AAU basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is critical. And the reasons I would name would be akin to the reasons that were mentioned earlier. That has to be a focus of our attention. But I think the reason probably is not a focus, right, is because that type of hard work is not necessarily it's not fun and it's not sexy. There's no highlights on ESPN about it. It's going to be celebrated, but it's just not a part of like our cultural norm. You know what I'm saying? Like while HBCUs are a part of our cultural norm, right? Like people love HBCUs and getting a college education. We recognize the importance of it, right? But outside of that realm, like on our day-to-day life and our day-to-day function, those things aren't a part of it as like sports are, as music are, as entertainment is. And so like I think that's part of the reason why it doesn't get as much attention and people don't gravitate it. Because, I mean, you know, it's just easier to gravitate towards sports. And maybe that could be, and I would ask you all this because I'm not sure, but do you think that could be potentially because, like, we are undereducated, and so instead of, like, focusing on, you know, teaching those academic skills, it's easier to go to sports because everybody at some point has played Little League football, basketball, baseball, so it's just easier to kind of naturally funnel that energy there versus, like, academically? Is that because if we said that we were undereducated or whatever, it didn't fit a part of our culture, is that the reason? And then my second point is I think also with the lack of funding for our institutions, I think while I do agree that it's systemic, I think the fact that we don't participate civically and specifically
mm-hmm.
regarding the census, and I had a chance to like work on some census stuff and kind of learn what the census was about a little bit more earlier this year. With the National Coalition of Black Civic Participation, is that what I've found is that, like, you know, people who participate in the census, that count is what the government uses to allocate resources, right? And in impoverished communities, right, communities of color typically, where there's a lack of trust of the government for a bunch of good reasons, right, that people don't participate. And when you don't participate, those resources, they get shifted to other places, you know? And so I think that could be potentially one of those reasons as to why we are underfunded in some ways. But those are just my thoughts based on kind of what I've heard from the two gentlemen prior to. But I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about my comments.
Okay. All right. Thank you, brother. Dr. Macklin.
So, say this. As it relates to athletics, the reason why you have so many students who navigate towards athletics is because there is not a high expectation of academics coming from the classroom for black kids. The expectation is coming through the athletic arena, but it's not coming from that model teacher in the classroom. And so until we have that high expectation, not watering down curriculum, not modifying curriculum,
come on, brother,
but keeping a high academic mindset for the for the African American, the black child, they are going to be pushed to athletics instead of academics. I have done work all across this country, and I see it every single day.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Uncle Sam.
Well, you know, the thing about the sports thing is the spirit of competition. That is real. I've been played sports myself. That the competition is strived from the coaches on down to the staff, and it's a moneymaker, okay? Now, when it comes to intelligentsia, okay, we do not allow ourselves to have a foundational spirit of competition where we can enhance the perspectives of who we are from a competitive standpoint. It's the other way. We're constantly told about what we can't do and what we're not doing and how we're second to this and that and that. That Eurocentric model, we got to toss that thing out. That's for them, okay? We need our own cultural models that we can achieve and work in and build from that and build in those competitive academic realities that will push us into toward excellency.
Well, it sounds like we need to start competing in the classroom as well as on the field and on the tennis courts and baseball courts and diamonds or whatever that is. Okay, I'm going back to the lines. I'm going to 0946, and then I'm moving up to 7974. 0946, you're on Empowerment Network, Martha Rome, Stan Macklin, and Dr. Macklin.
Yes.
What you got?
Yes. I'm so excited to hear from the experts here today on the educational system. And I would consider myself an educational activist. And one of the things that I think is a challenge is that when it comes to our students, we're always coming from a deficit model. Your child's going to go to jail. Your child's going to end up in trouble. We don't start with their strengths, because one of the things that I believe personally is that our kids' ability to process information quickly has improved greatly because of rap music. And I feel that what happens is, I had a little boy, he said they gave him an equation. If you had 5 dimes, 2 pennies, and 1/4, how much would you have? He said, you'd be pretty broke. You don't have much. That's a whole level of thinking that's outside of the box that nobody capitalized on. One young boy told me, he said, if I have to pass the test at the end, what is the purpose of me going to class and earning A's and B's and I still can't graduate? Another form of analysis that's not taken advantage of. So I believe that our children are very sharp, because remember, when you're bored, when you're white, it's because you're smart and you're ahead of the class. And so when our children are bored, they're labeled as not having any motivation, not having any drive. I think our children are very sharp. And another thing, I'll end with this. With the vocabulary, I heard someone talking about the vocabulary. Because when we took the black teacher out of the classroom, where we could use context clues and inference with the inflection and the intonation of our voice, we're an oral-based tradition culture, so sounds come easily for us. They've taken the phonetic learning out of the system. They'll give you incidental phonetics, but with this whole language system. And so a system that richly is an advantage to us, phonetics with sound and rhythm and all of that, is taken out of the system and we're crippled. And so I would just like to say that I appreciate everything that everyone is saying. And I agree with the brother that we're going to have to come up with our own supplemental program to assist our sisters and brothers, because if the school is not empowering them, then we have to empower them.
That's right. Thank you, sister. Dr. Macklin, what you got?
Well, good. And, I want us to truly understand that when we talk about the teachers of color, there is a teacher shortage in the country, but there's really a teacher, less than 2% of teachers in the country are African American men.
My God.
2%. 2%. And so until if we are waiting for the system to change that, it's never gonna happen.
That's right.
Gotta provide the 411 so we don't end up where we are now with the 911.
I heard that. Yeah. All right, let's keep it going. We're going over to 7974. You're live on the Empowerment Network. Marvin Rose, Stan Macklin, and Dr. Macklin. What you got?
Hi. So, you know, so many good points have been made today. I think for me, I look at it a lot of different perspectives. One as a mother, one is someone who's been working in higher education for over 22 years and who's been teaching in higher education as well. And so I think that, you know, one thing to think about in what Dr. Macklin said is that it is very systematic and it is strategic. And if you heard me say this on the show before, I say it quite a bit, right? The white supremacy is strategic, right? It's not by happenstance, right? We've talked about things like the Southern Strategy before. It's strategic. But I think what we're lacking is education is key, right? But education is the knowledge that you can recite. And knowledge is something that you can apply. And what happens is we have students who are regurgitating information. And I think I gave this example last week about my daughter being taught about the Atlantic Ocean being part of, you know, giving products or transferring products when the products were, you know, enslaved people. So we're talking about what that means, right, and how you apply that. The other issue is that a lot of black and brown children fall and succumb to stereo threat, right? So they succumb to the stereo threat and they succumb to the messages that they receive about them through our cycle of socialization, through our institution, you know, and other things, because we are not combating those things in a way. And unfortunately, they fall through those fractures and those cracks in the system. And to everyone's point before, yes, our students are disproportionately not only tracked to special education, but they are also disproportionately disciplined in a different level. And particularly our black boys and our black girls who are already adultified very early at a very early age and saying things or, you know, things are said to them like you're too sassy because you're asking too many questions. I had a teacher tell my daughter that, you know, she talks too much. She asks too many questions. Is this school? Right? It's school. So, again, the messages we have, the bias and the discrimination is all very real. And part of it is that the fix, we don't, you know, to what someone said before, we have a fix versus growth mindset, right? But from the physical standpoint, right, I think we're taught as black children that it's unlimited, but the intelligence is limited, right? It's fixed. You really can't do anything about that. So focus on the other part. What we really need to be investing in, it's all about a growth mindset. And what Benita was talking about is really looking at the funds of knowledge that our children have and being culturally responsive to that. And that's the problem, because we don't have, as the doctor said, 2%, right, of black male teachers. And when we think about, you know, women teachers and teachers overall, the numbers are still going to be low. We don't have the amount of culturally responsive teaching that we need. So we can't take the funds of knowledge that they already had and help them apply it, right? All we can do is punish them for it. And if you continue to punish someone and how they show up as themselves authentically, then what you're going to get next is silence, right? You're going to get silence, and you're going to get people who withdraw into themselves that, again, succumb to those messages and fall through those cracks. So I think that when you think about it, and the example I'll end on is when I lived in Georgia and was at a university working with a school system there, the students were tracked in fifth grade on whether or not they were going to proceed with getting a degree that would take them to college or a degree that would take them basically to trade school or not to college, right? In fifth grade, 67% of the black and brown kids were already tracked in fifth grade on where they were to go, and it was not the collegiate degree. So, again, when we think about it, absolutely it's strategic. We have to figure out ways to interrupt the system but also activate our parents to be empowered, right, and not intimidated by a system that wasn't designed for their children.
All right. Thank you, caller. Dr. Macklin and Stan, I want you to hold on 1 second. I'm going to one more line and see if I can squeeze one more call in before we wrap up. 1683, you are live on the Empowerment Network. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin. What do you have?
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Quickly, I know you're running out of time. There's been a lot of great things discussed today. I just have a couple of questions that I want to end with. One is, how can we change a system designed to keep us down from the get-go?
Okay.
My answer is, we can't. You're never going to change that system. It was made to keep exactly where we are, having discussions that we're having, doing things we're doing. That's the design of the system. The second question I have is biblical. Remember Sodom and Gomorrah story in the Bible? God has said to Abraham, because the people were so wicked and evil, but he gave righteous people an opportunity to leave. But most did not listen. In fact, as the few righteous people were leaving, being led by Lot and his wife, the people that stayed were having big time fun. They were partying so hard that Lot's wife, after numerous warnings not to, turned around to look back and was turned into a pillar of salt. They just couldn't. She just couldn't leave hell. Like I said before, if we truly want heaven here on earth while we are alive, then we must walk away from hell and don't look back. We've got to get
that.
Like the sister said last week, all of the things that we've got to get away from all that. We can't come up with solutions to change it. We can't try to come up with ways to make it better or enhance it or enlighten it and all that and move the all obstacles out of it that's keeping us back. We've got to say we've got to change us. Forget that. And as Brother Stan said earlier, like I've been saying, we need to find the God in us. We need to move forward with that premise. We need to start thinking outside the box, as they say in the corporate world. You know, because neither of us trying to enhance or improve this system. This system was set up to do exactly what it's doing to us.
Yes.
We need to come up with something totally new. We should not waste any more time trying to improve or enhance. It's not going to allow us to. It was set up to keep us down, and it's on its point. It's doing exactly what it was set up to do. Walk away from it and don't look back.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Dr. Macklin.
Don't look back.
Walk away. Stop being hard-headed.
Walk away.
All right. What you
don't
got, Dr. Macklin?
I
you got just about 90 seconds left.
I'm going to close with 30 seconds. And let me say this. In order to win the game, you got to know the rules of the game. And us persons of color, as relates to education, don't know the rules. And so if we don't know the rules, we're never going to win the game. It's time to change the game. Right. And so I thank you, Uncle Stan. I thank you, Marvin. I travel across the country. You can give out my contact information. I don't charge. Mm-hmm. I will go anywhere for free to talk about equity versus equality.
Okay.
All right. All right. Thank you, Dr. Macklin. This has been our NAAEA Summit on African-American Education. Stan, we got about 30 seconds left. What you got?
Great program. Great guest. Great input. Let's keep it up. Let's develop our own reality.
All right. Thank you, Stan. Now, if I didn't get to you this week, call back next week, callers. This has been a great show. Packed with a lot of information. Share this show with your friends. It is about African-American empowerment, one for another, undivided, until we all stand together. I'll talk to you next week. It's Marvin Rohn and Stan Macklin on the Empowerment Network. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Ever since, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.